From Pierre Corey's Medical Musings, The Interpretive Key to the 2,000-Year-Old Hermetic Canon, here is a cleaner, harder version. Up to this point, the focus has been on decoding the underlying operation described symbolically within three select texts from the Hermetic Canon. What follows is the product of that decoding, a set of operational definitions that render the wider canon legible by anchoring its language to a real material process. To our knowledge, this is the first operational reconstruction of the core roles encoded across the Hermetic and Alchemical Canon. I am aware that the magnitude of that claim may not be immediately apparent. Alchemical texts have been read symbolically for so long that another interpretation can sound like one more speculative reading added to an already crowded field. That is not what we are offering here. This reconstruction has been tested across multiple texts, multiple interpretive angles, and multiple AI engines. Until the key can be broken or shown to fail within these or other Hermetic texts, we believe it identifies concrete evidence that ancient writings preserved operational knowledge of sophisticated geochemical processes, both in nature and in the laboratory. Despite the guarded symbolic language in which that knowledge was preserved, the process can now be defined with enough specificity that its roles, materials, sequence, and product can be named in modern language. That would make this more than a set of literary interpretations. It would make it an interpretive key. For those wondering why I have detoured into this material, or how it relates to health, the answer depends on the larger argument of both books. This chapter provides a major pillar of evidence for the conclusion of the blueprint of life, while From Volcanoes to Vitality explains why the same mineral water chemistry matters biologically, agriculturally, and environmentally. The Emerald Tablet, the Six Keys of Eudoxus, and Letter from Sternbeche on the True Stone of Wisdom describe geochemical processes from three different angles: the order of the geoatmospheric cycle in nature, the sequence by which the essence is brought forth through art, and the properties of THE essence it yields. Once both arguments are understood, this detour should no longer feel like a detour. At the risk of brief repetition, and because the table that follows requires it, I should restate the role of each text. Their language shifts, repeats, and sometimes appears to contradict itself because the process was being guarded. Once that process was reconstructed independently of the texts themselves, the symbols began resolving into specific meanings. One interpretive rule matters before the reader turns to the table. In alchemical texts, terms such as sulfur, mercury, salt, fire, and stone do not name fixed substances. They name roles within a process. The table below does not attempt to catalog every possible referent. It presents one internally consistent mapping of those roles onto a specific, real process, nature's rock-water circuit and its laboratory extraction in Shimonishi's work, as described in Sternbeche and the Six Keys. In this framework, sulfur-bearing atmospheric chemistry and sulfuric acid are treated as different expressions of the same activating role. This is not an arbitrary selection. It is the mapping that allows the same word to carry different meanings depending on the stage and context of the operation, while preserving coherence across the texts. The table was only made possible by anchoring the symbols to two processes that could be observed, tested, and reproduced, one in nature the rockwater circuit theory and one in art Shimonishi's work with biotite. The interpretive key recently underwent a final refinement. The Emerald Tablet does not describe only surface weathering. It describes the larger geodynamic cycle by which the mineral body biotite is formed deep below the Earth's surface, lifted toward exposure, opened by water above, released into life, and eventually returned to depth through burial and reformation. The later alchemical texts narrow that planetary process into art. They begin with the already opened body, vermiculite, and describe the operation by which sulfuric acid draws forth its concentrated essence. The Six Keys of Eudoxus describes the sequence of operations by which a mineral essence is drawn from its rock parent and brought into concentrated form. The Letter from Sternbeche describes the resulting essence, what it is like, how it behaves, and what it does once produced. The Emerald Tablet describes the natural cycle itself, the planetary order by which the process unfolds in nature. The table below does not force identical vocabulary across the canon. It shows how the same underlying operation appears under different symbolic emphases. Canonical interpreters of alchemy have long agreed on the structural logic of these texts. The stone is the product of conjunction, not the substrate. Mercury is a principle, not elemental metal. Sulfur is an activating force, and the secret fire is a penetrating solvent rather than literal flame. Across psychological, historical, and esoteric schools, Jung, Newman, Principe, Folconelli, and conciliator is broad agreement on these points, even where interpretations diverge. What our work advances is the material specificity of the terms. The canon was trying to describe a real process, but it did so without naming the substances identifiably. That is why the language stayed open for centuries, until the process and its product were realized in the world. The symbols could not be fixed to a single meaning. What was missing was the operation itself. In 1977, after almost 15 years of determined effort, Shimonishi's successful method provided the missing reference. Through his work with vermiculite-derived mineral chemistry, he devised an extraction process that produced a substance whose properties correspond strikingly to what the canon had long described under different symbolic names. We return to a line in the six keys that I originally interpreted in Chapter Roman 11 as referring to the three steps in the process of producing the golden elixir. But the operations of the three works have a great deal of analogy one to another, and the philosophers do designedly speak in equivocal terms. The six keys went over these three steps or works repeatedly, using constantly shifting language and metaphor, one biotite weathering to vermiculite, two sulfuric acid penetrating the porous stone, and three mineral essence being released. Once that reference existed in the modern world, the language of the texts could finally be anchored to a working operation rather than to speculation. It was only through Shimonishi's work that the canon became legible. There is one more feature of this work that needs to be addressed. I am no longer sure that is the line's primary meaning. As I sat writing this chapter, reflecting upon the coherence of these three texts, separated by hundreds or thousands of years, another strange resonance occurred to me. Our journey through the Hermetic canon was also confined, almost unbelievably, to just three works, as that line above states. The Hermetic and Alchemical canon is vast, far beyond the three texts decoded in this book. In fact, neither MB nor I have ever knowingly engaged with any other texts from the Hermetic or Alchemical traditions. At one point, I tried to get a sense of how much of that literature remained outside our attention, and the scale of it was staggering. And yet the number of texts that actually entered our lives, held our attention, and ultimately yielded a coherent framework were just these three: the Emerald Tablet, the Six Keys of Eudoxus, and the Letter from Sternbutsche. That would not be especially remarkable if these were the three most obvious, most widely read, or most accessible texts in the tradition. But they are not. The Emerald Tablet is foundational and famous, yes. However, the Six Keys is known only whit,